Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Ladies Leadership Circle in partnership with Phoenix Business Radio, where we are live from the Business Radio X studio in the East Valley and brought to you by the woman who lived it today. I'm your host, Joanne Holland, along with my co-host, Karen Nowicki.
Hello.
And we have another incredible woman with us today, Karen, the editor and of the Phoenix Business Journal. So, Elena, would you please share with us and introduce yourself? We always ask our guests to introduce themselves and share what you'd ever like to share with us.
Well, sure. So I am the editor of the Phoenix Business Journal. And next month will be my 23rd year at the Business Journal, which is kind of crazy.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? And I've wanted to be a journalist almost as long as I can remember, probably sixth grade. And here I am. So I moved here from Chicago. And I don't know how much you want me to go into.
Oh, go in, yes. Tell us the
story. Hey, listen, we've got an hour.
Yeah, we've got an hour.
I graduated from the University of Illinois, and I got a degree in, they didn't have a journalism degree back then or back where I was at school. So I have a communications degree, which I guess just means I could do more. And got really tired of shoveling the snow like so many people do. And unfreezing my locks with a Bic lighter to get into my car. And so I just decided that I was young and I didn't have anything tying me down. So I headed west, kind of like the frontier women. And I was going to go to California, but my mom had a friend in Chandler, which back then was like no man's land.
Wild, wild west.
But I think we like Chandler.
We do. And we're Chandler girls.
That's why.
but back then, to your point,
yes. Right. Farmland.
Yes, it was tumbleweeds. And,
I would never
farmland.
Speak ill. So I ended up staying with a friend of my mom's who was just in love with the Valley and had been there for a couple of years and knew people and took me around. And I thought, you know, there's some opportunity here. I'm not exactly sure what. I don't have a job. I don't know anybody except for this one lady friend of my mom's. And I thought, what the heck? So I got a job at a shoe store. Because there were no newspaper jobs at the time. And that was my background. I had worked at NBC for a little while and really, really decided I wanted to stay with newspapers. So I worked for a community paper, and then I worked for a daily paper that wasn't the Tribune or the Sun-Times. So it was kind
of... So make your guess if you're from the Valley.
So the Southtown Economist was not as well known. But I did that for a while. And then when I decided to move here, I thought, you know, I'm going to just get that job at the big daily in Phoenix. At the time was either the Arizona Republic or the Phoenix Gazette.
Right.
And that didn't work out so well because they weren't really hiring. So I started selling shoes and that paid the bills. I grew up in a retail family. My dad had a shoe store. And so I had that background, thank God. So I did that for a while. And then Independent Newspapers, which is a community chain of newspapers in the Valley, was looking for an editor. And I thought, oh, I can do that. I hadn't done it yet. I'd only been a reporter, but I thought, what the heck? So I went in and I applied and they hired me. I think they hired me on the spot. I can't remember exactly, but I started like the next day.
Oh, wow.
So I think it was either a phone call between the interview and the next day or whatever. And I started right away. And I stayed there for 7 years, which is also
a long time
for a community newspapers. But they were doing something so different and so special that I just loved it. And I hadn't been in that environment before. So it taught me so much because it was a very, very small operation and one person did everything. So I learned how to design pages. I learned how to take photos. I learned how to edit copy, every single aspect.
So it was editor quotation marks
yes.
and additional duties as required.
Of course.
And then the leap.
Yeah. So the leap came, there was a salesperson that worked for the Independent who had gone over to the Business Journal. They were looking for a reporter. And she recommended me, But of course, my head had already been, you know.
I'm the editor. Editing.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
We got that one. We know it.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, gee, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be a reporter. And I didn't really know that much about the Business Journal because in the world I was living, it was, you know, it was Little League and birth announcements and all right. of that stuff and city council and school board and all of that.
Community
so,
news.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't really, I mean, I had seen it. And so I went in for the interview and as during the conversation, come to realize, like in many newsrooms, their resources, even back then, were very slim. And they really did need another editor. But I didn't feel comfortable telling the editor-in-chief that he needed another editor. Right. So I took the job and I thought, all right, you know, I'll do this. So 6 months in, they realized that they needed an editor. So they had these special sections called Focus that we did every single week, and they needed somebody to coordinate them and, you know, write for them and all of that. So I did that for a while. And then I got special projects on top of that. One thing led to another. And before I knew it, I was projects editor and then associate editor and then managing editor and then editor. So yeah, so 2 weeks before 2 weeks before 9/11
is when you became editor.
Is when I became editor. So baptism by fire is what I tell people. So yeah, so it was really as horrible as it was to be reporting on the business aspects of everything that was happening in the wake of the tragedy. It really brought our news team together. And it really brought our staff. We really solidified, you know, that this was our team, and we did great. I mean, many of them are still there. We have a lot of longevity on our staff.
That's 17 years.
Has Ray been there that long? How long has Ray been there?
Ray has been there for three years. It'll be 4 years.
Ooh, yeah, I think I do remember him sharing.
Yeah,
that.
So Ray, who's our publisher, is actually originally from Rochester, New York, and he worked in radio. Actually,
that's right.
Yeah, and then he was hired as an ad director in Milwaukee at our Milwaukee Business Journal, and then when Don Henninger left, that's a name people will know because he had been our editor prior to me and our publisher after. So I just followed him up the rank.
Yeah.
And so he had been with the publication for a long time as well. I want to say 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have some, like you said, very longevity with your staff because obviously 9/11 was true. 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And several of them are still there.
Wow.
Our healthcare reporter has been there 30 years.
And that is unique.
Obviously in good health.
Yeah. Go ahead. And that's unique to journalism to have, you even said with this other publication, you had been there for 7 years and that was a long time. Mm-hmm. So that speaks volumes about the Phoenix Business Journal team and the close relationships that you have.
Yeah, it's been a very special place to work. And as the media industry transforms and changes and faces more and more challenges, you know, I'm really excited about what the future holds for the newspaper industry.
Print is not dead.
I say that a lot, that print is not dead. It's struggling, though. and I like to think that the pendulum is kind of coming back the other way, that people are paying more attention to quality journalism and news that is really important to them. And it's funny to me that I'm like having to go out and talk to people about that because back when I was working at that community paper and back in Chicago, and even, you know, when I first got here, the Republic and the Gazette, I mean, there was no question. You paid for a subscription.
Yep.
It wasn't there wasn't even a question. If you wanted the news, you paid for a subscription. There was no internet. So, you know, I mean, as much as I love the internet, it really, you know, it killed the industry.
It sure did. It shifted it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but paper and my mother, and granted, she's going to be 88, still cuts out articles and mm-hmm. still mails them to her friends. And I saw this and thought of you or this something. So paper cannot go away. Cause I mean, I'm her daughter. I'm hooked on that too. I mean, I'm religious. My Phoenix Business Journal arrives, you know, at my home. And it's, as someone told me when I first moved here in 89, they told me, oh, If you don't have the Phoenix Business Journal, you don't know anything that's going on.
You said, well, I'm going to go get that Phoenix Business Journal.
And so you did. And at that time, I started working for employers who actually received the Phoenix Business Journal. And I will never forget, and it was a small company who actually we had, he would send, staple the go-around thing that to all the managers.
We called that the pass-along copy.
Oh, yes. So when you had to check mark it after you read it.
Yes, yep.
You had we did that in the school districts.
Yeah, you had to do your, and or whatever. And he would actually, and I'll share this, and he's no longer, he's actually deceased, but in our weekly managers meetings, he would ask us questions.
Good for him.
From the business journal. And I was like, you do read it, and you do, you know. And he just wanted, because he said it's important for us to stay in tune with our local market. And this is the best source we have to do that. So with that, how has it changed a little bit?
Oh, it's changed a lot. So getting back to the cutting out the articles, and I still tell people, if you want to get somebody's attention in this day and age, don't send them an email, send them a handwritten note. With something cut out of, I don't care if it's the Business Journal or any other publication, they will save it and they will be excited when they see it in their mailbox. Yep. And that still holds true, I think, today.
I agree.
However, we're kind of a dying breed. Oh, I don't mean that. I don't mean that literally, although,
especially since that rhino died today and there's only two female ones left.
I know.
The whole species is extinct.
But if you think about it, you know, we're all of roughly, I think, the same age sitting around the table. What, you know, your children and their children are really who you need to look at in terms of how they're receiving their news. So I teach at Cronkite. I teach at Walter Cronkite School at ASU. And that in and of itself is just a very interesting, especially when you're old school traditional journalism like me, to ask them questions, to ask the students questions about where they get their news and what do they consider? We go through a whole session on credible news sources and all of that. As much as it makes me cringe to know that these are some of the answers I'm receiving, like BuzzFeed and TMZ. And
what?
Yeah. It's pretty frightening, actually. Now, I'm not saying all the students give me answers like that. I had, and I don't remember if I shared this story with you, Joanne, but I had one student, I always like to ask what they want to do with their degree. And because some of them are public relations majors and some are, you know, journalism majors and some are sports writers. And one student said, I want to be the female version of Ryan Seacrest. And she literally stopped me I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I want to be like Ryan Seacrest, an entertainment reporter. And I couldn't help myself. And I know I wasn't supposed to say this. I said, what are you doing in my class? Which was absolutely, by the way, for all you teachers out there, the wrong thing to say to a student.
Remember, she said she only teaches one class. This is not her profession. Yeah, so I just want to go that on.
So what was her response like?
Well, she didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't get it. And so we had a little bit of a conversation about all the different types of reporters that there are and the difference between a sideline sports reporter and a hardcore journalism, you know, reporter. And so we had a good discussion about it. But those are the kinds of responses that I get on a pretty regular basis. The sports reporter, the entertainment reporter, you know, I don't have a lot of people saying to me, you know, I want to break news. You know, I want to find out what's happening and be the watchdog. It's just, I hate to say it, but it's a bit of a dying breed.
Well, I think too, you bring up a memory that I have. I remember talking to Sandra Day O'Connor a few years ago. It was quite a few years ago because she was just coming at that time with the whole iCivics and how to engage these students. I asked her, so what are you seeing? And she goes, no, what's so frustrating to me is I can ask a student, name two U.S. Supreme Court justices, and it's deer in the headlights. But if you ask them about who's the judge on American Idol, they can give you all four names.
It's accessibility. Yep. And obviously what traditional media, at least the news, has done for us.
And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, you had to know, you know, how do you not know who the Supreme Court, you know, Chief Supreme Court Justice is? How do you not? I mean, and I don't know, again, if it was our generation that we were, you know, browbeaten to know and understand and respect the importance of that role. But I see so much importance, though, in sitting down and taking time to read a newspaper. It's the best Sunday morning, in your backyard with what I'll call Chamber of Commerce weather in Arizona, you know, with whatever you drink in the morning, and just reading and absorbing the environment and comprehending and taking a little note, or like you said, cutting out that article and forwarding it to somebody or sending it to somebody.
But here's the problem with your scenario. You can't read an iPad outside.
Right.
Right. Because of reflection.
Yes.
Another reason to like print.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
No. And you got to love print. And so with that being the change, the digital world and the digital thing, what else has changed? What else is different about the Business Journal that we knew 25 years ago and who it is today?
Yeah. Actually, 35 years ago. We're going to be 35 years old.
That's right.
So, again,
and you always throw good parties on those acronyms.
We do. Those are good parties. So the interesting thing, there's been a lot of change. And so from the digital first standpoint, which is how we talk in the newsroom now, we used to have to have conversations about, do you think that story will hold till Friday?
Because we
would put the paper to bed on Wednesday night,
right,
and it would get printed on Thursday and mailed so that you had it in order to read outside on your patio on Saturday. But the change and the speed at which people consume news and information is the primary change that has caused our news, or forced our newsroom, to have to react differently. And so we're writing stories literally 24/7. In some cases, we do two digital editions a day. So one,
I get my morning buzz.
One at 7 and one at 3, which is all, I would say 95% of that is staff generated content. Fortunately, we do have a very large parent company. So total, we have 42 business journals across the country. And occasionally, there will be a story of interest or relevant to our market, or one that we would localize. So, because what most people don't know is that we have 4 reporters. And in a valley this size...
Not 40, four.
Yeah,
I wish we had 40. So it's critical that we know what our readers are interested in. Mm-hmm. What we didn't have before, again, that we have now, and that most newspapers, and even TV and radio, I mean, we're all so dependent on metrics. We are always looking at traffic. We are always looking at who's looking at our stories. That was the one thing you couldn't do with print, you know, other than the occasional letter to the editor,
right.
Or maybe a focus group here and there. You really didn't get a lot of feedback unless you really made somebody angry. There was no social media for people to comment. So it was that handwritten letter that somebody would write to me and say, I hated your story. Why did you do this? You know, that kind of thing. And I used to love getting those. I mean, because it showed that people were not just reading us, but they were passionate about what we were talking about. Right. And that was a good thing. And we knew that we hit a nerve. And so that was, but those were the only ways that we knew we were covering the right things. When you're online and you're a business to business publication like we are, there's a whole different group of people that you now have to think about when you're digital, and that is the consumer. And so there are certain things, like we do quite a bit of restaurant retail news. We do a certain amount of hospitality and tourism, all important to business, because at the end of the day, let's face it, we all shop, we all spend money.
Right.
So you could make the argument that anything is a business story. And I make that argument a lot, actually. But when you only have 4 reporters, you have to really figure out what is it that people are interested in. Sometimes it's not what I think they should be interested in. But if I were an editor of a traditional newspaper that just came out on Fridays, I could make those decisions and say, well, you know what? We're the watchdogs. This is what you should be interested in. And so we're going to give you this. But you can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the issues with the newspaper industry in general. Going back to the days of Walter Cronkite, is the news industry dictated what you knew, what you learned, and with the internet, with the, you know, and the inordinate amount of information that is now available to us, we see where that has led us. I'm not saying it's all bad. In fact, most of it is very good. But when you have to figure out what to believe and what you can believe and what you can't believe, or you have to decipher fake news and alternative facts, that's a scary place to be if you're in the industry I'm in.
Well, right. And we've seen where, at least recently in the last several years, I mean, people have lost their jobs. They've reported incorrectly, or it turned out not to be, you know.
Well, worse than that, people have always lost their jobs for being incorrect and missing a fact or getting it wrong. That's okay. It's not okay, but I mean, that's understandable. Thing. And that's one thing. It's another thing when you have a particular group of people, and I'm not even sure I want to call them reporters, who literally are making up the facts, or they're not doing their due diligence. Maybe they are reporters, but in their haste to get to be first and not right, they will put information out there that has not been confirmed or has not been checked and double checked, in some cases really impacting somebody's life or lives. And in other cases, you know, we see it all the time. You know, there's a difference between a reporter and a commentator.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And most people, I don't think, really truly understand the difference. One has an opinion and is able to sit there and spout it off. The other is reporting the facts.
Right.
As they've collected them through credible sources, eyewitnesses, you know, seeing it themselves, you know, however, whatever that looks like. But it's true. You know, at the end of the day, it's what happened.
And the responsibility, this is more of a question than a statement. The responsibility, I believe, lies with the end user or the consumer. But how many consumers, and I'm thinking of any generation, any age, are actually taking in that information, that news, whether it's through the TV, through social media, through print, radio, whatever it is, and asking themselves, is this valid? Is this truth? Where is our responsibility as consumers?
We are 100% responsible. And if you remember, well, again, none of us are that old, but I think you've seen it and heard it. If you remember back to Walter Cronkite at the end of his newscast, we all know what he said.
Remind me. I do know. As soon as you say it, I'm going to be with you.
And that's the way it was.
Oh, right. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what else did we know about Walter Cronkite? He was the most credible, most trusted news source on TV for everyone. In that era. Okay. He told you to believe it, and we believed it.
Right.
Because we knew we could.
Because we knew we could. And so when you ask yourself, how responsible am I as a consumer of news? You need to understand what a credible news source is and what one isn't. And you also have to understand that news has also lost that nonpartisan place that it had at one time. And so, you know, you will see very slanted. I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to call out any television stations or anything, but you see very slanted news depending on the station you're watching. So if you're compelled to watch one of those stations, and it's okay if you do, just make sure that you're watching the other station to get a little more of a balanced understanding of what's happening. And that is your responsibility. Because if not, you're going to take whatever information you get, you're going to process it however you're going to process it. And then the next thing you know, it's on social media. And it may or may not be right. It's just something you had an opinion about. And we see it all the time. And if your news feeds are like mine, are filled with, you know, news stories and sources like CNN and all of that, you see it all the time. It actually is exhausting.
And the generation that you're teaching, so these are freshmen, sophomore?
A combination. I've had graduate students, but, you know, in that age frame of, you know, 18 to 20-ish.
Okay. What's been the most pleasant surprising?
Oh, boy. So I think the most pleasant surprise has been their willingness to learn. So they're coming in pretty green, but by the end of the semester, most of the time, they get it. And they're ready to, hopefully, and they're ready to move on. And sometimes, like if I teach a more of a like the 201 class is sort of the entry level. And then I talk to other adjunct professors who teach 301 who get some of my students.
Right.
I'm always really interested in finding out,
showing up.
how are they doing? You know, and so I try to track a few of the students. And I also know going into it that not every student is going to get it. And not every student is going to feel like this is for them. And when you have the lower level journalism classes, that's where they're supposed to figure it out.
Right.
So I am kind of tough on them. I think the biggest disappointment is, and this kind of goes back to our conversation about sort of the education, they can't write a sentence. And that's so frustrating to me.
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh, but I'm just like, oh my God.
But it's so true. When I haven't done any hiring recently, but in other positions within the last couple of years, I've been hiring, and to read resumes that read like a text message with lowercase I's and lack of punctuation, even using real language that is not, you know, written language. It's more conversational. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised.
You mean LOL?
Yeah. Well, and you get a lot of that in the cover letters. So a lot of times what I've seen is that their resume, somebody does their resume for them. Okay.
Oh, but then they...
Really, for the most part, they're writing up their cover letter because they're shooting it off to you in an email or, you know, whatever.
And I am old school.
That's when I see it is in that cover letter.
That's mm-hmm. interesting. So now there's a difference between how the resume reads and the personality coming through the cover letter.
Well, and honestly, you know, when you're in journalism and you read and you see something that you just know is wrong, I mean, that's like an immediate, you know, black or red mark that says, yeah, this isn't going to be the person I hire.
Yeah, I will admit with social media, as often as I am on it for both personal and business, I will be upset with myself how frequently I'm misspelling words, even with a spell check, but in my quickness or even how the phone will do an automatic mm-hmm. change of a word. I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I didn't slow down long enough to check. You know,
this is why someone still sends letters.
Yes, exactly.
And prints it out and reads it through and says, oh, that is the wrong word. I don't want to use that word. And I circle it with my red pen and I look at it and then I send, because I'm the first one I look at emails. And it's, I'm thinking of something, but then something else enters my mind. So I type something and I'm like, oh, those were two different thoughts. I thought about this and then I ended up saying this. And I'm like, that makes no sense now. But had I seen it,
yes,
yeah,
typed out and looked at it and reread it through. And I do recycle all the paper just for the green people out there. It takes on a whole different meaning. And I guess, too, that goes around, like, I enjoy getting handwritten notes. Mm-hmm.
So do I. It is one of the neatest things. And there's some nostalgia to having an article tucked in there. My dad does something really cute, which has nothing to do with media. But for every birthday or Christmas or whatever occasion he does to send a greeting card, he now is going through all the photos he has of all of us growing up, grandkids as well as kids. And he'll always put a photo, either a photocopy or a photo in there. It's his little trademark. We love that. But getting that thing in the mail next to all the other bills that we receive mm-hmm. and my Phoenix Business Journal is a treat. There's something neat about that. So it stands out.
Right. Well, and you know, I mean, just look at, I mean, look beyond the handwritten note. I mean, anybody buy greeting cards anymore? I do.
I do. Yes. Hallmark is my friend and I'm on their.
But that's another, I mean, seriously, if you want to look at an industry that is probably not going to be around much longer, it's probably not, I'm not going to say it's Hallmark because they have a million other things that they do.
But the greeting card.
But the greeting card business is one I think is probably going to
die. Interesting. Yeah, because you can do that digitally as well, mm-hmm. right? You can.
But I don't like opening email and have something pop up at me and say,
"Yeah." It doesn't hold the same weight as a stamped envelope that ends up
and
either sitting in the studio when I get here or come to home. Yeah,
and like I said, we're all of that age, so we still do that.
Yeah.
But go ask your daughter or your granddaughter or whatever. I have a niece who's 29. She doesn't write handwritten notes.
Yeah,
thinks I'm funny for doing.
See, my 30-year-old daughter. Handwritten notes from, she just had a baby. And so after the baby shower, it's the handwritten notes.
Yep.
And there's still Emily Post's Book of Etiquette. It's still out there.
It still exists.
I will say she did do handwritten. My niece did do handwritten notes for her wedding.
See?
But I think that was mom telling her, you need to do handwritten notes for your gifts. Yeah. I don't think that that was something that's necessarily top of mind for everyone, everyone that's in that generation or younger.
And you know, and I think what I see or what I feel sometimes is when you're handwriting, it's causing you to think
differently. Differently. And
then when I sit at a.
And to slow down.
Right. And to really look, how is your handwriting turning out? I know I write slanted, so I really have to be conscious so it's not woo. But you think differently. And I worry about the students who just do everything in such a hurry. And I hear them sometimes say, oh, they'll catch that mistake. catch that mistake. why would you purposely, I guess, do it incorrectly? And maybe that's our generation that, I don't know, I don't want to say pride in your work. I don't want to say, but there was a different level of care put forth and thought put forth. And I know that's how that generation reacts, but sending a text message that says, you know, a happy holiday in my means nothing to me because there was no time or effort put in. And then I know, of course, you know, you're talking to somebody who 2 months ago has still had their BlackBerry. So that's a whole nother generation, but the FBI and CIA could not find me. So they could find all of you. So now that I have my phone, my Samsung now, I didn't realize that there's a way you can send out to everybody in your contact list.
Oh, yeah. Welcome, Joanne.
But why? So you sending me happy St. Patrick's Day, I'll use it, really means nothing.
It gets really bad when everybody starts to respond and you're on a list of 15, 20, 30 people.
You know, and I was just like, how unmeaningful.
Times have changed.
They have. So I'm curious, and Joanne, you prompted something when you were chatting about around just the whole technology of writing. Over the years that you've been in journalism, how has the, how do I word this? I don't want to ask about technology like information, but the act of writing changed. So I'm thinking back to the days when I was in Kyrene school as a, you know, first year teacher and my principal coming to me and I was still on the what do you call that? Typewriter. I'm doing this with my hands, right? The typewriter. And those little,
it was electric.
And those smelly sheets, right?
Yeah,
and he's like, Karen, do you not know how to use a computer? I said, oh, I had one class in college. He's like, listen, you are spending way too much time redoing it and try the computer. Of course, I fell in love with it. It took a little bit of a learning curve, but the ability to change and move sentences. You talked about handwriting a letter. You know, we have to start over or get out the whiteout. So can you tell us a little bit about from that perspective as a writer, technology has got to be just amazing over the years.
Well, a blessing and a curse. I mean, clearly we can do a lot more, you know, now faster. And that's all great because we have to be able to do that. What's really interesting is over the years, as tablets and our phones have become like an appendage, the idea of how we do what we do in our content management system, and that's sort of a system where we type in all of our stories. We have to literally write 4 headlines for one story. They're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
So the first headline is going to be the headline that everybody sees when they go to our website. Okay. So now when you go to our let me rephrase that. When they go to our website on a desktop computer.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
Okay.
Okay.
Then you've got
There's more characters involved. Yep. We can say whatever we want, right? Then we have to write a headline for SEO optimization, which is getting other people to get to our story. And those are very specific because you have to include very specific words and phrases in the headline, and it can't be real, real long. So let me give you an example. So we've done studies where the Arizona Diamondbacks in a headline, in an SEO headline, does better than just having Diamondbacks.
Interesting.
In terms of D-backs?
No, not enough people know what that is.
Oh.
So you have to be very specific. They like names, they like, you know, company names, things like that. So that's the SEO headline. Then we have to write a headline for print, because the story could eventually end up in print.
Right.
Which those headlines often get changed and then changed again, but you still need to write another headline. Then we have to write a quote unquote short headline, because when you look at our story on mobile, a 25 word headline is not going to cut it. You really need to say what you're going to say in a very short
three
space.
3 to 4 words.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And so, depending on what device, and same thing with our photos, we have to crop our photos very differently.
I'm familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
As to
whether they're going to be seen on a tablet or on a desktop or on a mobile device.
Or Facebook or LinkedIn
or, Facebook,
or Twitter
yes.
or Pinterest or
yes.
Instagram. Yeah.
And so all of that time that we saved by having technology is now kind of coming back to say, well, you got to do this. And you got, because people have figured out that it isn't a one size fits all.
Yep.
You know, environment. Some people do everything on here, which my eyes are not good enough to do everything on my mobile phone.
Yeah, neither, nor my fingers.
Or my fingers, yes. And then, you know, as far as using a tablet or, you know, I mean, it just depends on your circumstance. For me, it's usually a laptop, which is still quite a bit smaller than my once gargantuan screen that I had on my desk. So that's kind of one way that things have changed. The other thing is, you know, now, I mean, when I used to go out and I was a reporter, I had a notebook and a pen. Maybe two pens, because they warned you that one pen might run out of ink. Then I kind of progressed to my notebook, a couple of pens, and a tape recorder. Because, you know, they say,
right,
especially if it's like a profile interview or something where you want to get down every word. But I'll tell you, that's another example how technology may or may not have helped us. Because you know how long it takes to actually transcribe an entire interview? So I learned very quickly that that was a very inefficient way to be a reporter. And so I kind of ditched the whole idea of having, you know, of having a tape recorder. People don't like it anyway. They're not comfortable. And they're not necessarily being their true selves when you're sitting there with a tape recorder. So I kind of stopped doing that, you know, and then now, even today, when I'm talking to somebody and I know it's going to be for a story, I'm doing it on my laptop. I can type very fast, and that's just second nature to me now, you know, as much as my pen and my notebook were when I first started.
Fascinating.
Wow.
I had an experience with my daughter. She's finishing up at ASU, and mom's been an editor of sorts for her as she's gone through, you know, her school. But the other day she had a paper that she had to turn in, and she said, could you take a look at it? You know, it's due by 6 o'clock at night. And it's the first time she sent it through Google, which for me was a blast because actually I was still at the studio. And I said, yeah, I'll take a look at it. And I pulled it up and I could see that she was looking at the document at the same time that I was looking at it. And we were having, I had the most fun, which is, I'm kind of weird that way, but we had this fun back and forth answering and cleaning up her work without even, you know, having a verbal conversation. I could see her typing, then I'd ask a question, and I had a blast. My husband was like, he couldn't even understand. You did what? But I enjoyed that. So I would imagine that are your reporters specifically working on their own stories in their own target areas? Mm-hmm. And is there any collaboration? Like at what point does your team begin to collaborate?
So we meet every morning. Every single day at 10 o'clock to talk about what everybody's working on. And that's usually where we'll get the, oh, well, you know, I was working on something similar, or, but they all have beats. And so regardless of what the story is, it's going to be based on an area of coverage that they have. So we're really heavy into real estate for obvious reasons. We do a lot of restaurants and retail. Education is a big subject for us. Technology, tech companies, that's a big area for us. But the list can go on. And with four reporters, it's really important that they all have one really strong coverage area that is their priority. Mm-hmm. As other things happen and as news breaks and all that kind of stuff, we do have to get together and talk about, you know, is this something that our digital editor is going to just react to and write it up and get it, you know, get it posted? Or is there a bigger story, you know, story there? In fact, we were talking about the Uber situation and the pedestrian that was killed, unfortunately, on Sunday, I think it was. And, you know, and we talked about the fact that everybody had that story. And so the question then became, well, how do we, you know, is it a business story? How do we make it a business story? What, you know, what's going to happen next? And so we, as a group, talked about, well, how much money are they going to lose, you know, halting testing? Are any other companies like Waymo or any of the other, we're a hotbed for autonomous vehicle testing. Are any of those other companies going to halt their testing until they see what happened? There's legal ramifications. I understand, and I have not seen a police report, but I understand the woman was not in a crosswalk. She was walking a bike across the street. But again, so from a liability standpoint, is Uber responsible? Is, you know, so mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot of data because we, you know, for anybody that knows anything about these autonomous cars, they measure and see everything. So there's a lot of data that's going to, you know, be a part of this to determine, you know, what went wrong, if anything. I mean, it's hard to say, but, you know, today on the news this morning, you already had all kinds of lawyers that were on all the different news.
But saying the same old thing expect them to.
Yeah.
So love that you guys say from a business perspective,
right,
as well as community perspective, what can we bring?
Yeah. And so we would do that as a team, as a group, because we have a reporter, you know, who covers tech And so technically it's an autonomous car, right? So mm-hmm. it's a lot of technology. Right. It's also transportation. Is a little bit of economic development?
Right, because who else is affected?
Right. Mm-hmm. So we have to decide as a team, okay, you know, what are we going to do? And then who's going to do it? So we do that all the time, every day, but not for every story, because sometimes reporters just know what they're working on that day and they come and tell us and we sign off on it and they're on their way. The editing process has changed a lot though, because when they turn that story in back in the day, they used to sit down with the editor and we would literally line edit the story together. We just don't do that anymore because everybody's moving too quickly. So they turn the story in as editors, we read it, we make the changes, we go back and we don't necessarily go over and walk over to their desk and ask them questions, because now of course we have instant messaging. So we can, yes. you know, type a question, say, hey, are you sure this company's in Tempe, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever. Right. And so we do a lot of that, which is slightly unfortunate because the whole idea of an open concept, you know, office space or floor plan in an office is so you can actually communicate with people, but it's just getting harder and harder to do.
Well, and keep up with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then just some other changes too, is what I've seen over the past 10 years or so is really an increase in the amount of events mm-hmm. that the Phoenix Business Journal puts on very well, by the way.
Thank you.
But if you could share some of those events that you do in the community that everyone is welcome to attend mm-hmm. and how you can go about finding out information for that and kind of talk about some upcoming one. I know that especially for Ladies Leadership Circle will be would actually probably like to attend. So
yeah, absolutely. So like any other newspaper or media operation, we've had to find ways to generate revenue because advertising is in print especially is still important, but obviously those numbers are way down across the board, not just for the Business Journal. And so you find other ways beyond circulation and print advertising and digital advertising to generate revenue. And for us, we've always been really proud of being able to identify the people in the community that deserve recognition and then recognizing them in a fun way, in a way that, you know, brings that spotlight on them or that attention to them. And so it seems like from when I started years and years ago that we went from somewhere around 5 or 6 events a year to 26 or 27.
Wow.
So depending on, now they range in focus. I mean, right. You mentioned the one that I think that your listeners would be interested in, and that is April 12th is our Outstanding Women in Business event, which is in its 18th year. And that's been fun for me because with our former publisher, we kind of created that. And it was a way to really highlight the women in the community, the women business leaders in the community that were doing, you know, going above and beyond and doing extraordinary things and making a difference. And so we've continued that over the years. And so each year we'll hold a nomination. As we do for many of our events, and we get tons and tons and tons of nominations, which is wonderful. But then we put a panel together of sometimes they're past winners. I'm included in the judging panel. And so we put a group of folks together to advise us on, you know, who the winners out of all of these nominations should be for that year. And we have 25 with 3 special awards this year. There's going to be a Mentor of the Year, a Rising Star, and Lifetime Achievement.
Wonderful. Oh, wow. Good.
So we, you know, again, each year after 18 years, you know, you want to do something a little bit different or add something to, you know, we started off with doing it with a panel discussion. And then I used to do sort of an Oprah style, you know, get everybody up on stage and we would just chat. And from there, we went to asking each honoree a question that they had to pull out of a hat, which made them all very nervous. And so we try to, you know, we try to shake things up a little bit year after year. But so that's coming up on April 12th. And we used to do that in conjunction with another program that we started about 5 years ago called Mentoring Monday. And Mentoring Monday, which this year was held February 12th, brought 40, actually we had 50. But the idea was to bring women business leaders together in the community to mentor those up and coming professionals. And it was really, truly an amazing morning. And it was, and it's happened, you know, the last few years that we've done this, it's grown, but we have mentors that keep in touch with the women that they've talked to. And this is not a conversation that these mentors are having for an hour. This is like speed dating.
Yeah.
So they literally have like 7 minutes
to leave an impression.
Yeah. And so many of them have, and they've followed up with their mentees and the people that they've met that morning. And so many relationships have been created from that. And I know, Joanne, you've been a mentor. Mm-hmm. And so you can vouch for that. But we used to do that program together with Outstanding Women in Business and kind of make it a half a day. There was some, we got feedback, both good and bad, that said, you know, wow, you know, a half a day is a really, that's
long
a lot
day.
Of time. I don't think I can commit to a half a day of, you know, festivities, despite the fact that we're honoring women in the community. So we looked at it in a couple of different ways and decided, since our Mentoring Monday program is done by all 40 of our markets on the same day at the same time. Mm-hmm. So there's like 10,000 mentors and it's really cool.
Cool concept. I love it.
But so we kept that date, you know, for that event, and then just kept our Women in Business date, you know, a couple months later, so that we can still, because they're very different. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to fit when we did it initially. So, so on April 12th will be the Outstanding Women in Business event where we honor the 25 women.
That's great. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
And you can get tickets on our website. So you just go to the little drop down that says events.
And if you would share the website?
Yes, it's phoenix.bizjournals.com.
Perfect. And all information, all thing. And if you don't have a subscription, you can also find how to get a subscription on the website.
Yeah, you can either get a subscription, you can do a trial subscription. But if you do nothing, at least sign up for the two daily emails that you get a day for free. Not all of the content will be available to you if you're not a subscriber. About half. We put, you know, for reasons that we just talked about, generating revenue, we do have a paywall. And so if you're a subscriber, you have access to everything.
But the subscription is so reasonable.
Right.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really, and the more years you do, the less and less it is.
Yeah, because we have a three-year subscription.
Yeah, I have a three-year. That's nothing.
Very reasonable.
And about advertising, though, because I do think, at least I look at the advertisements, I mean, still play a huge role. Again, can they find that information?
Absolutely.
On the website?
Yeah, they can find it on the website. They can call us. You know, they can call me personally. They can call, you know, the main number.
Yeah. And besides the events, I also know, let's talk about what you're famous for, is your book of lists.
Oh, yeah.
Book of lists.
So our book of lists is actually a year older than the paper.
It
I know.
Is.
Yeah, isn't that? Yeah. We had the book of lists first, just by a year. And what it basically started out as, it was a top 25 list of everything. You name it, we did a list for it. For example, the top 25 banks, the top 25 home builders, the top 25 architectural firms, the top 25 interior design firms. You name it, we did a list for it. In fact, at one time, we had the largest book of lists of any market in our chain.
Oh, wow.
Why am I not surprised about that?
Because we're all overachievers here in Phoenix. So we have one research director, and he's the person who, actually another long timer, Dale Brown, has been with us for 17 years. And he has had various and sundry different positions there as well. But so he handles all of our lists. He does all the surveying for all of the lists. That is a chore. We have cut down the number that we've done. And sometimes they change from year to year based on, you know, what might be new and different. So, for example, a couple of years ago, we started doing a list of food trucks. Just for fun. But they changed too rapidly. We realized that it wasn't something that made a good resource.
Mm-hmm.
And the ultimate goal of that book is to be a resource for people in business. Mm-hmm. So, so sometimes we'll change it up a little bit. We did farmers markets one year, and that was another one that they changed too much. And so the ranking, each time that we do it, so it's not, you don't pay to be on the list. And people tend to not understand that, because there's other publications in the Valley that do associate, you know, paying for an ad and you get a place on the list. Ours is very quantitative. And so depending on how we decide to rank it, and a lot of times it'll be based on the number of employees that you have. Banks, for example, might be based on the number of, or the amount of local assets, deposits.
Okay.
So we figure out what is that quantitative thing for that list. And then that's how we'll rank them. So we'll send out the survey to, we start obviously with the previous year. And then we always, in the paper and online, we always say what we're surveying for coming up. And so people can see. We also have an editorial calendar that go, you know, that right. is new every year. And people can see all the different lists that we do. And if they have a client or a company that they think should be on the list, they can contact Dale and, you know, and he'll send the survey out to them. And then what we do is, you know, we still kind of look at that top 25. And then we also compare it to where they were on the list the year before. So there's some semblance of, you know, we can tell if a company is growing or not. If they drop on the list by 10 spots, you probably want to look at, you know, well, what changed. Sometimes it's the number of employees. Sometimes right. it's how much revenue they, you know, so it just depends. But the lists are a wealth of information for people who are looking for leads.
And that's always a great event.
Oh, attend. And then we do the book list party to celebrate everybody in the book.
I got to go this past year was my first time. I loved it. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And we always try to do it at a fun, you know, like a fun venue. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And so many things too. Now, on a personal note, I have to ask, how is Harley?
Harley is great. Harley is my now 9-year-old lab, who we did get as a puppy. And I tend to name things, pets after vehicles and things with wheels. So I also have a Porsche who I never talk about because she's just kind of gun shy and she's a 17-year-old cat. So she doesn't really want to be the center of attention. So, but I do have to mention that I have a cat. But yeah, no, Harley's great.
He's, and they live absolutely fantastic together.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the cat doesn't really do much with the dog and the dog thinks she's a chew toy. So it's a little bit of...
Did I see too that you just celebrated an anniversary?
Yes.
Yes.
Today, actually.
Oh, it is today.
Yeah, we actually celebrated yesterday because we both had the day off.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
how many years?
14.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Was it Fleming's? Did I see where? I'm trying to remember.
We were at Fleming's.
That's where we do all of our anniversaries as well.
And their service is really great. And it's nearby the house. And
yeah, fun. So,
yes, because you are a West Valley girl.
I am a West Valley girl.
Very proud
to be. Unlike the two of you East Valley girls. Yes.
But we connect in the middle.
It's true.
But no, always great to go out, though. I always laugh that I say when I go out to the West Valley, you know, I could stand if somebody just blindfolded me and dropped me off in Glendale or even in Goodyear, and I just stood there for a minute, I would think if I didn't know my surroundings, I was in Ahwatukee. Because, I mean, same stores, I was like, so, you know, and especially with the Arrowhead area. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I live,
Right. And all that area is like, no, this is Ahwatukee. No, you're actually in Glendale. No, you're actually in Goodyear.
I think there's a little less traffic in my neighborhood.
I don't know. It was pretty busy when I went over to see, where was I? I was at the Rogue Tomato.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a cute little place.
Yeah. It was really cute and I had never been in there before. So, all over the valley these days and just getting bigger and bigger.
Absolutely. And, yeah. When I moved out there was no 101.
No,
well, you mentioned
really?
The 303 earlier. Hello.
Yeah, there was definitely no 303.
I don't even know what a 303 is.
Oh my gosh. Tell her the 303.
Okay, you need to get out.
I know. Yeah. Now listen, I used to, when I owned $99 Social, I used to drive from Chandler to Anthem 3 days a week. It about killed me. I'm not one of these people who can travel far, which is why the studio's in Tempe right now. And I'm in Chandler because it's a 15-minute drive with traffic 20-25. But 303, where's the 303? Isn't that awful?
So it's the outer loop after the 202.
Yeah. The best way to explain it. It's even wider than...
So it, kind of, yeah. But it reaches out further. So Buckeye...
Buckeye Surprise.
Surprise.
And then loop takes you back out to the I-17... Yeah. Right there.
Okay. It probably wouldn't have been helpful for you.
No, on that route that I just described. No, right. 17 no. and made
so if you're coming,
sense,
yeah, but, if you're coming from Surprise or.
But like the 202, it'll be a loop.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the whole goal.
And where is
we're
it
not
right
very
now?
Creative here, if you figured it out. We have the 101, the 202, and the 303.
Right. Hey,
so I wonder where the 404 is going to go.
And where is the 303 existing right now? Is it actually, there is a little stretch of it right
There's
now?
There's a little stretch of it in the West
actually
Valley.
Actually, a decent sized stretch.
Yeah, between. North Phoenix and the West Valley is really the connector there.
Was it 20 miles yet?
Yeah.
About 20 miles?
I think it's 20 miles.
Oh, hello.
Welcome. It's actually bigger than
Business Radio.
Yeah. Yeah. And tell me that you've driven the whole loop of the 101.
I have.
Okay.
And,
okay. And I just want to make sure you've looped it all.
Yes, I've done that. So that would require you to be in the West Valley.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I've been there, done that. I just don't get there very often. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And now you can get the 303 off the 101. Yeah. So it'll come when you're heading up that north.
I'll be laughing at myself when I eventually get out that way. Ah, there it is. You'll both come to mind and you can make fun of me with me.
Yes, because it is. It's and the valley continues to keep growing.
Oh my gosh.
And so with that, the Business Journal continues to grow.
Well, we hope to. You know, again, we have to face all the challenges, you know, that are out there, and that's, you know, resources. And, you know, we've been doing partnerships with over the years. We've had partnerships with radio stations. We've had partnerships with ABC 15. You know, and because we realize that information is important, and we all heard the saying, information is power, and we want people to have that credible news. And so, you know, we try to get it to you as best we can in as many formats as we can. And we're going to continue to do that.
Well, and let me just compliment you that you do an excellent job.
Thank you.
And have always been. And anyone who comes new to the Valley, it's on one of my first of the five things you need to do when you arrive is, okay, now go online and get your subscription for the Phoenix Business Journal.
Well, thank you.
If you're here,
we appreciate that.
Whether you're owning your own business, conducting business, or part of a business, it's still something you should read. And thank you for all you do with outstanding community events, with so much. I know we didn't get the opportunity, but even your personal community support that you give, that you are passionate about. I know one of them being Gabriel's Angels.
Yes.
And funny how that has animals. And you notice the theme here. So thank you, because you are an amazing resource and credible resource for the Valley with the news. And that's important right now, because we are being surrounded and hit with so many other things that to know that there is one source that you can either call or email or ask a question to. And like you said, even if someone didn't like the article, thank you for writing that letter or sending that email saying, hey, because we read it.
Yeah.
And that's so important. So I know we have a couple minutes left. Is there anything that you wanted to add and say?
Well, that's why teaching is so important to me. It sort of brings everything full circle. I knew what I wanted to do when I was a kid. I don't even know how I knew what I wanted to do, but I wanted to tell stories. I wanted, you know, to give people information. Because I really was too little to watch Walter Cronkite, although I grew up knowing the name and knowing his reputation. And as I got older, you know, it just became that much more important. And I think just the idea of being able to share what I know or what I can with students who are serious about getting into this profession and how important it is for them to follow all of the things that we talked about in terms of, you know, credibility and truth and facts and being accurate and all of that. So I kind of feel like it's my way of giving back. And I really enjoy it. I love the atmosphere. I love the energy that the kids have. And, you know, so yeah, so that's.
I know. And you're teaching at the largest public university in the nation, which is just incredible. And thank you for doing that, because I think as much as you're enjoying it, I hope the students realize the opportunity that they're being given to somebody who's passionate, who's loved it, who's known, like you said, what you wanted to do since the sixth grade. So that's so cool. Anything else before we...
No, it's just been a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this opportunity, obviously, to have you in the studio. I got to come see you at the Phoenix Business Journal not too long ago. So welcome to our home. And it's fun to have you here on Ladies Leadership Circle, because this really is a conversation, as Joanne will always say, about speaking to the women who've been there, the ladies who've been there, done that. And clearly with your success track and your continuation with leadership in the Valley, we need to hear from you.
Well, thank you. Yes. It was a lot of fun.
Elena Lowry, thank you for being with us today. For those, thank you for listening to Ladies Leadership Circle in partnership with Phoenix Business Radio, with Business Radio X, as we hope today's show connected, inspired, and lead you to continue to be and do your best. Thank you, Karen Nowicki, and I'm Joanne Holland, and make it a great day.